Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a week for a big win for Wisconsin Democrats. But before we get to that, wish I was there. Let's hear from Robin Voss, Gordon Hintz, a remarkable young woman who started a group that fights teen suicides, Mark Pocan, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, Senator Dale Coinga, Representatives Jeremy Thiesfeld, Michael Schraw, and the governor's two choices to run two important agencies, PSC and
Department of Safety and Professional Services.
Department of Safety and Professional Services. Thanks, JR. Wish I was there. Thank you.
An awful lot of the money that Governor Evers is proposing goes to targeted districts. Right? I want to help people in every single district. I don't want to say if you're in an urban district, you're going to get substantially more. And if you're in a rural or a suburban district, you're going to have to figure out how to do more with less.
If education is going to be the great equalizer from an opportunity standpoint, you need to recognize that the cost of educating a kid who's at such a disadvantage are simply higher than they are in other areas.
When I was 14 years old, I was very suicidal. I feared that none of the doctors could understand or relate to what I was going through because they didn't look like me. So I founded and am now president of an organization called Speak and Be Heard. Speak and Be Heard is a club for all students from all backgrounds to come, listen, and tell their own story.
The president and ICE have been claiming that they're deporting dangerous gang members and drug dealers and human traffickers. According to their own records they provided us with, at least 39 people had no documented criminal history next to their name.
Along with Governor Evers, Secretary of the Department of Financial Institutions, the State Treasurer, Executive Secretary of HEAP, are ready to collaborate on a study to create a state-run student loan refinancing authority to provide recommendations for an effective and feasible way for us to lower interest rate for borrowers all across Wisconsin.
The Affordable Care Act was passed. It was passed by one party. The message was like this was going to be a solution, a big solution for health care. Now we're in this conversation like, well, it's not. What we really want you to do is expand Medicaid population to 138%. What are the consequences if every single payer in your organization is a Medicaid payer? That's a problem.
Assembly Bill 22 is simple. It has all new truck drivers who are receiving their truck driver education receive training in the signs of human trafficking.
Last year, the issue of where to place these violent sex offenders was finally resolved with Act 184. This bill replaces the requirement of the 1,500-foot rule and the adjacent language with the word near. Local committees at the county level are now going to have the flexibility to determine the best site.
I believe one of the key issues requiring my immediate attention is to ensure our state's transition to a clean energy economy is done in a responsible manner.
14 years ago, I made a horrendous mistake that hurt my son. It was the worst experience of my life. I've taken responsibilities for my actions, and I have vowed that it would never happen again. And it hasn't.
I looked it up, JR. The average high in Milwaukee in June is 80. The average low is 64. I'm sorry, in July. Mm-hmm. The average high of 80. The average low is 64. It can get as high as 90. And 50,000 Democrats and hangers-on and groupies and family members are coming. How happy should we be? They're coming to Milwaukee for the Democratic State National Convention, July 13 through 16.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the bottom line. Milwaukee has slipped from the tier of top cities in this country. I mean, population has declined. It's not considered the same tier as a Miami, a Houston, a New York, Chicago.
The two we beat?
This is an opportunity for Milwaukee to prove itself. The question is Milwaukee up to the challenge? Can it pull off an event with 50,000 people? Can it have the accommodations for all these high rollers? Can it have the events that woos them and gets them involved and excited? It's the challenge for Milwaukee to be on the center stage and to show off and show what it can be. Mayor Barrett, during the announcement, talked about the Renaissance downtown.
Yep, we'll hear from him in a minute.
Anchored by the new Bucks Arena.
Yes.
So, okay.
Fiserv, Right.
Now it's time to prove it.
The logistics are amazing. I mean, they had to put a hold on 15,000 hotel rooms, and the security costs $50 million. No, we're not going to pay that. And the host committee's got a promise to raise $70 million, of which they've already got $11 million pledged. I'm scared. If my math is right, they still need to find $59
million. Yeah. Well, you know, there are lots of, so that's the thing with Democrats, there are lots of corporations who often sponsor these things. They give out money. So who are they going to get money from? Is there going to be any issue with accepting those kind of donations? They got that to worry about. Hotel rooms. It's not just going to be in the core of Milwaukee. If you think about it, like, think about Houston, okay?
Yes.
Geographically. Driving across Houston can take you a long, long time.
You and I spent a lot of time at Houston. I was there. Maybe you weren't.
No, I was in New York for the 04 convention, Philadelphia for 2000. But, you know, going across town in Houston can take you a couple hours. Well, within an hour of Milwaukee is what? Grand Geneva, down by Lake Geneva, Kohler.
Up Fox Kohler, Valley. Wisconsin.
So there are options for the wealthier clientele of the party or the members of the party to go find a swanky place to stay. So there's that opportunity. It's not going to be just a downtown Milwaukee convention. There's going to be a little more spread out than that.
Needs 12,000 volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why did we get it in light of the fact that Mr. Trump carried our primary in 2016? And is it a result of Governor Evers' win, Senator Baldwin's clout? Mr. Perez, the DN national chair, his wife's from Tulsa, they got married in Milwaukee, his daughter goes to UWM.
There are all kinds of reasons you can point to why, but what it is clear is that Wisconsin is going to be one of the, if not the, swing states in 2020. If you start looking at the map, I mean, you can go through and find any number of people, prognosticators, who have like already assigned basically every state but four or
yes,
five
they have.
In 2020, right?
Right, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and yeah.
But Michigan and Pennsylvania, looking at what happened last year, they went bluer than Wisconsin. So there are people already kind of like putting those toward the Dem column. So what are the true swing states? It depends on who you talk to. Look at Florida, for example. We beat out Miami Beach for the convention. I've seen arguments of, well, it should have gone to Florida because that's really a bigger electoral, you mm-hmm. know, jackpot for anybody. But Florida, even in the blue wave of last year, went to Republicans narrowly. So went to Republicans and has been trending that way. Wisconsin, however, won. It only went Republican once in the last 30 years. That was 16 to Donald Trump. But it's also symbolic. It's part of the old blue wall Democrats talked about. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. These were like rock solid Democratic states. I don't think that Philadelphia or Michigan have gone to any Republican since 88 or something like that. So, you know, you could count on them. That wall crumbled. Now you have Michigan and Pennsylvania, better position for Democrats. Wisconsin becomes a symbol of rebuilding that wall, of a state that is key. It's also got a rural component to it, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've got rural Wisconsin.
Right.
So, you know, but here's the thing. I went back and looked. The last five conventions for both parties, all right? There's no guarantee of success because you held your convention in a certain state. Republicans won Cleveland, or won Ohio last in 2016 after going to Cleveland in 2016. Before that, they had lost Minnesota in 2008, Florida in 2012, New York in 2004, and Pennsylvania in 2000. Democrats, they went and lost the place they had their convention in 16. They lost where they had their convention in 12. That was Charlotte for North Carolina. So, I mean, there's no guarantee. But, again, it's symbolic. It's about the upper Midwest. It's about that blue wall, about rebuilding, reconnecting. And Tom Perez, during that rollout, said, this is a symbol of the party's values. Mm-hmm. Diversity of Milwaukee, it's a majority-minority city. It's history with labor. Wisconsin's history, before Scott Walker, he kind of added. On the environment, education, it's a symbolic pick, a statement of the party's
and
values.
Both Governor Evers and Mayor Barrett went out of their way to say no tax dollars will be involved in this. But I honestly thought that Miami would pull this thing away from Milwaukee.
Okay.
I just thought you had a lot more money in Miami, mm-hmm. and I thought we'd beat out Houston, but I thought we'd lose to Miami.
It's been interesting.
Milwaukee.
The people involved with the Milwaukee bit have talked about feeling like confident as one of the favorites for a long time. I mean, there have been stories, I think even like a year ago, talking about Milwaukee being a front runner because these things we talked about, like that symbolism. And they've had to fight off these last minute kind of like attacks from Miami, yeah. saying, well, they can't pull it off. They don't have the amenities that we have in Miami. And same thing with Houston. Well, again, back to my original point. All right, Milwaukee, you've got it. Now you got to prove you can pull it off.
Okay, but some of these gritty issues, the incarceration rate of African Americans and the achievement gaps. Anyway, let's listen to the victory lap, the statements from Mr. Lazary, the Mayor Barrett, the Governor, Tom Perez. Once it was announced that Milwaukee will host the Democratic National Convention July 13 through 16, 2020. Please.
I've heard people say the Midwest is the Rust Belt. We will show in 490 days that the Midwest is the Opportunity Belt. Milwaukee is a proud majority-minority city. Diversity is our greatest strength, and Democrats believe that diversity is and always will be one of the things that will always make America great.
The ability for us to showcase Wisconsin as a place where we value diversity and inclusivity and value young people, we can do that with this convention. That is so important for the state of Wisconsin.
This is not just something that serves one sector of our community, but this is an opportunity to display not only our diversity in terms of the numbers of people who live here, but those businesses, small businesses, African American businesses, Hispanic businesses, Asian businesses, Christians, Muslims, people of no faith, everyone who can come together around the idea of making sure that that $200 million economic impact gets spread around the city.
Milwaukee and Wisconsin are in many ways microcosm of this nation. When people ask me how Milwaukee's doing, my response is, we're fighting back. Milwaukee and Wisconsin are ready to roar. We are ready to host this convention, and we're ready to make sure that all of America knows how much we care about the working people in our community. This convention is going to be as good as the Milwaukee Bucks are right now. It is going to be the best.
This is a game changer for the state, for the city, and I think what's most impressive is the fact that we went up against two of the best cities in the country, two of the biggest cities in the country, and Milwaukee prevailed. And so the next time someone tries to say that Milwaukee can't handle something, or that Milwaukee is too small or not capable, this is, you know, our punch back. This is the evidence that we can do anything we want when we reach for it, and we will no longer be defined by our limitations, but, you know, will now be a city that is going to constantly dream big and look to do bigger things.
There was a lot of cheering in that video, JR, but now let's look at some of the statements. A African-American alder said, make sure that the benefit is felt throughout the city. That's a reference to Milwaukee's inner city. And then we did hear, as you said, Tom Perez said, we will have a discussion about how to retake our democracy in a proud union town. This is a city that fights back, Mayor Barrett says. Mr. Lazary says, a chance to reintroduce the city on an international stage. I want to ask you about the reaction from Mr. Jefferson, executive director of the State Republican Party. Quote, no city in America has stronger ties to socialism.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's because they're trying to push the image of the Democratic Party now moving towards socialism in modern days, when the last socialist mayor of Milwaukee left in 1960, I believe.
Zither?
There were three between 1910 and 1960, a much different brand of socialism than what we're talking about today. Look, another thing to note, Mayor Barrett, who we expect to seek re-election in 2020, probably not a bad thing for him to land something like this and have it be right in front of the voters, or coming to Milwaukee just after they vote. I think he's in spring of 2020, so probably a boost for him to have something like this landed in the city.
Okay, what does it mean? I think, what are we up to? 15 Democratic presidential candidates now?
Not counting yet.
I understand, but are we going to see a parade of them come into Wisconsin before the April 7th primary, because we're going to be, the Milwaukee is going to be hosting the Democratic National Convention?
Not just because of the convention, but because we're important. I mean, it all depends how the map plays out, right? I mean, this thing could be over before it's to Wisconsin. I doubt it will. People I talk to doubt it will. But where is the nomination at, especially with a crowded field? You have Super Tuesday ahead of us. You know, they'll start to thin the herd a little bit. So it's a good question, but I think, like, Beto O'Rourke is coming this weekend to Wisconsin, for example.
I didn't know that. Is
he? Yeah, I think he's going to be here on Sunday.
He just declared. I think he's number 15 or 16.
So, you know, we already saw Amy Klobuchar, sorry, incorrectly, from Minnesota, has been here. Klobuchar, thank you.
Our neighbor.
She's been here. So, I mean, you're going to see a lot of people come to Wisconsin. It's also, again, symbolism. Hillary Clinton did not come to Wisconsin after the primary in 2016. That was a constant knock on her when she
primary
lost the state.
She lost Bernie Sanders, excuse
then
me.
Lost state by less than 25,000 votes, I think 23,000, something like that. So
right.
It's a symbol, symbolism, right? Coming back to Wisconsin, retaking the upper Midwest, bringing back that blue wall, stuff like that.
Okay, new subject. The governor announced this week that he wants the state, well, we're going to replace the two juvenile facilities in Irma.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants the two state-run, one of them to be in Milwaukee at the intersection of Teutonia Avenue and Mill Road, the other to be in the Fox Valley village of Hortonia, population 1,086. Any surprises in his announcement?
One, we knew Milwaukee basically for a while now. There was a committee that was created under the bill to close Lincoln Hills.
The last budget bill.
Go out and look at sites. They didn't pick a site, but they asked members for feedback, and the one that came back overwhelmingly with support was this one. So that wasn't a surprise. Now, going to Fox Valley, Michael Schroz, Republican lawmaker from Oshkosh, he's been working on a bill that would extend the deadline to close Lincoln Hills. He questioned, when I talked to him, why go to the Appleton area?
Right.
His point was, majority of kids who are in Lincoln Hills right now are from Milwaukee, Kenosha, and Racine counties. Why not have a second facility there? Or he said, you know, I understand wanting to go somewhere farther north, but that's not where the population is that's going to this facility. And when you have kids incarcerated, you want them by a support system. So have it there. Now, they're looking at two. The budget that Evers put out had a bonding for a third one.
Right.
Now, part of that is the idea of moving juveniles, 17-year-olds, out of the adult prison system or correction system in general, justice system, and back to the juvenile justice system. That could produce a bump, number of people incarcerated, so that's something to watch. Two, there's blowback from Milwaukee officials about going to this place in Milwaukee because, you know, residents in the area are worried about having a new, you know, youth prison in their backyard. What's that going to mean? How is that going to impact where they live and work?
Well, but as you said, the governor said in his statement, are naming these two proposed sites. Remember, there was a deadline to close the Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. And the governor said, I want to extend that. Now he comes with this announcement, two state facilities in these specific sites, saying this is significant action towards our shared goal of ensuring kids get the education, programming, and mental health treatment they need in supportive settings that are closer to their families and communities and community treatments they need. We still don't know where the up to three county-run facilities will be, right?
No. The deadline for those grants right now in current law is March 31st. There's also talk about pushing back that deadline because, again, we're talking about pushing the delay of closing Lincoln Hills. But right now, March 31st is the deadline. Oh, by the way, the legislature will not be in until at least April, so there's no time to pass a bill that would push back that deadline. I'm not sure that's going to be addressed just yet, but that's something to watch is how that progresses.
Yeah, well, the whole corrections budget is very interesting because we had barracks in Techida and Ellsworth and elsewhere, and the budget also takes what are now two juvenile prisons and converts them, I think, to a medium security.
Yes.
But the juvenile component alone, $274 million, big dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. We had the final votes in Congress this week on the resolution to stop the President Trump's declaration of an emergency with our border. I find it intriguing. Our 10 delegates, 8 U.S. House, 2 U.S. Senate, split 6-4. Let's just do the rundown. Voting against President Trump's emergency declaration, Senator Tammy Baldwin, Democrat, Republican Representative Brian Steil, and the Dean of our U.S. House delegation, James Sensenbrenner, plus Gwen Moore, Mark Pocan, Ron Kine, all Democrats, voting for the President Trump's emergency border declaration, Ron Johnson, Sean Duffy, Mike Gallagher, and Glenn Grothin, 6-4. Any surprises there?
No, we talked a couple weeks ago, though, with Sensenbrenner that and Gallagher, there was this kind of risk, right? Because Trump is the party these days. Trump is the party base. The Marquette polls got his numbers like the upper 80s, low 90s. So the base of the Republican Party has moved toward Donald Trump. Anytime you go against him, there's a risk that you could alienate the base. For Sensenbrenner, it's a different dynamic than Gallagher because Sensenbrenner's been around the late 1970s. He's more of a brand.
79, a special election.
So Gallagher is still building that brand, so a little more risk. But I had not heard yet real talk about a possible primary challenge against those two. because of it. Now with Ron Johnson, he had kind of made some noise about concerns with this last few weeks, in the end votes with the president. Interesting to note nationally that people like Senator Tom Tillis out of North Carolina, who had originally said he was going to be, you know, against the, you know, was going to vote against the president, switched, right ahead of the vote, amid the threat of a primary. It shows you again the power of the base and the party base moving toward Trump. You got to be careful where you alienate the president.
Any consequences that you can see from Mike Gallagher, who doesn't have the tenure of a Jim Sensenbrenner to buck the president, to go against the president?
And when I asked about this after the House vote, I did not hear any strong feedback about a possible House or primary challenge, in part because Gallagher is a good fundraiser, has done a good job in representing that district. I mean, Democrats will tell you that whereas once they held that district, you know, a couple, they've held it off and on over the years, that's not really a top target anymore for them because they just see Gallagher in a strong position. Now, if you got a strong primary challenger, maybe be a different story, but the view right now is that Gallagher's in a pretty okay position.
Okay, and in a related development, both the Governor Tony Evers and Josh Call joined the national lawsuit, joined other state officials, other state attorneys general, against the president's emergency declaration. No big surprise?
No, Call had said a couple weeks ago that if he saw the risk of money kind of basically earmarked for Wisconsin being diverted toward the wall, then he would take action. They're now saying they're seeing that, so that's why they're getting involved. This is a reflection of having a Democratic attorney general, right, versus a Republican one. Brad Schimmel, old Republican AG, sued Barack Obama a lot.
Yeah.
Barack Obama's a Democrat. Yeah. The new Dem AG is starting to sue the Republican president. You know, that's just kind of the way things are working these days with attorneys general and taking issue with federal policy. It's just kind of a reflection of that change.
Okay, new subject. This is the public service announcement phase of the show.
Okay.
1 month from now, you and I have to file our Wisconsin income taxes. So I got curious. We've been reading news stories about how federal refunds are down because withholding was up last year. So I asked about Wisconsin. I wonked out, JR. So far, as of March 9, our 2019 refunds are $18 more, which is an increase of 2.7. They're averaging $679 per taxpayer. However, the number of filers as of March 9 is down 6% from 1.3 million last year to 1.298 million this year. I'm sorry I wonked out, JR. Any PSs on that?
Get my taxes done March 29th.
Okay. Let's talk about the open seat in 64th mm-hmm. District, which Representative Barca had held. Now he's our state revenue secretary. We have three Democrats and a Republican. Do you remember enough of the backgrounds?
Yeah.
I mean, the primary is April 2nd for the Democrats, but you want to walk them through?
Look, Spencer Zimmerman is a perennial candidate. He's run in multiple assembly seats.
This is third or fourth, or maybe fifth time.
And not one's in where he lives. He lives in Janesville, I believe.
He does.
So he's not considered a serious candidate for our serious.
He's one of the three Democrats, excuse me.
Serious threat to the Democratic nomination. It's really viewed more about Tip McGuire and Gina Walkington. Let's start with McGuire. Is a former aide to Barca. He is an assistant DA in Milwaukee County. I used to work in the Kenosha County DA's office, I believe. So there's an element of the caucus, Democratic Assembly Caucus, who's lined up behind him already. Gina Walkington, a community organizer, ran for a neighboring assembly district in the fall. Lives in Bristol, which is, if you know anything about the district, is just outside of the district line. She's also got members of the Assembly Democratic Caucus lining up behind her already. So that's kind of an interesting thing to watch. It's kind of like the Barca wing of the caucus with Tip, and kind of like some of the younger female progressive wing of the caucus with Gina. Those two really the ones to watch in that primary on April 2nd.
And then the GOP candidate, Mr. Mark
Stalker. I talked to him. He'd been in the paint industry in various roles in sales, that kind of stuff, off and on for, like I said, 30 years, something like that. And look, this is a mid-50s Democratic seat. So
prior to Barca coming back, it was Cruiser's seat, the mm-hmm. county exec, correct. Excuse
Long
me.
Long time. Represents the Kenosha area. So really it's about the primary, unless, you know, the caveats, unless there's some real movement against Democrats. Like, you know, if Governor Evers' budget proves really unpopular with swing voters, maybe that generates the enthusiasm among the conservative base. Something like that gets people charged up. Maybe you see something happen. But right now the money is kind of on it being still in Dem hands. You'll know for sure if you see Republicans spend money post April 2nd on that seat, like a significant amount, then it means it's a race probably.
Okay, primary April 2nd, Democrats, and general election April 30th.
The way state law works, Tony Evers didn't have time really to call the election, have it match up exactly with the spring election. So this is the kind of next best thing, have the primary the same time we're going to the polls for the April 2nd general election, and then have the special election 4 weeks later.
Okay, and now let's quickly note that Representative Jocasta Zamarripa has announced that she will not be seeking re-election in the Assembly because Milwaukee Alderman Bob Dodiman has announced that he'll be retiring. She'll be seeking that seat.
Yeah, just one thing. When I talked to her, she's keeping the option open of running again to see how the spring goes. But, look, this is a reflection of Democrats are in a deep minority in the Assembly. So if there is an option at a local level to run for something and win, you have more of an impact. You know, that's something she talked about. I talked to her about it. She would have more of an impact, possibly, on the Common Council. Eric Genrich did not seek re-election in a Green Bay seat.
Green Bay mayor.
Running for mayor right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just an example of the reality for Democrats in the Assembly about what's a better choice for me, working in a local office where I can do things or being here where it's, you know, you're a little disadvantage right now.
Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So the Wedding Barns, the Wedding Barn fight, I should say. So we had this last week talking about how they got good news from Tony Evers. Well, the Tavern League, not to sit down on this issue, said, okay, if you're going to say they don't need a license, we're going to tell our members, hey, you guys should look at ways to amend your liquor license to privatize, make a room in your bar private, because that private room then can act just like a wedding bar. You can get around various rules, like when you have to close and that kind of stuff. You can host these functions. Now, what I don't know for sure is, you know, how many people are going to take advantage of this. Like most taverns that I go to don't have a room big enough to host a wedding reception just off the back of the bar, right? But the Tavern League's not been happy about the wedding bar issue for a while. If we're not going to require wedding barns to have a license, the thinking goes, well, what can they do then? The issue is this, though. I don't see, in talking to people on both sides of the aisle, a legislative fix for this issue anytime soon.
I don't either.
The reason why, again, much like minimum market we talked about, it cuts across party lines. It's not a true Democrat versus Republican issue. It is a who's in your backyard issue.
Yes,
do you have a wedding barn? How many taverns do you have?
That's right.
Do those taverns lobby you on things?
And you had alleged counsel that couldn't deliver any answer on this.
So keep an eye on that. If any bars, like the, one of the pieces of advice from the Tavern League was find a vacant storefront, make it a private room, and then have host receptions there.
That's now, fascinating.
Watch. Is there a court fight about that? Watch what happens with that stuff. It could be an interesting chapter.
We're almost in overtime. Mixed.
So Don Krim, Over Evers' nominee to be DISPA Secretary, Department of State Professional Services. She went before a committee this week with the Senate and testified about this child abuse charge from 14 years ago.
Right.
Afterward, two Republicans in that committee said they still had concerns, but one, Devin Lemieux from Oostburg, said that you shouldn't hold something against you from so long ago. Hold that against you. Here's my question. What does that mean for her? Has she done enough in this testimony or in the documents that have been released by the Evers administration to rehabilitate the nomination? Or does it just languish? Does Scott Fitzgerald, Senator earlier, say, okay, look, we're just not going to vote on that nomination, just keep it out there? I don't know, for example, if it goes to a floor vote, would she get 17 votes? Because it's open vote for all everybody. Can't she get all 14 Dems plus three Republicans? Well, if Lemieux is saying that he's maybe there, need just two more. So a better bet, I talk to people, is that it just kind of hangs out there for a while.
Okay. And then
the Miller
falling.
Park tax.
Miller Park tax.
So
Miller Park is not falling, but the tax is falling.
I went and looked. The Audit Bureau 1999 said that they projected at the time the tax should end in 2014.
Yes.
Well, in that time of the Great Recession of 2008, they also have paid for their upgrades to the facility or the stadium. So now it's finally going to end, barring unforeseen circumstances. March of 2020, I think, something like that, should be over. I mean, you were here in the night. This tax not only built Miller Park, it also led the recall of the state senator. It's been a stick in the craw of taxpayers in Racine, Ozaukee, Washington, and Waukesha counties for something in Milwaukee
and
County.
And the backdrop, the surtax that rebuilt Lambeau Field has ended. So there's always that.
Yes.
Okay, JR, I want to talk about week ahead because there's a lot happening. At 2 p.m. Monday in the Dane County, before Dane County Judge Richard Neese, you're going to have a hearing on a challenge to the lame duck laws.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2 p.m. Monday. Tuesday, you're going to moderate tonight a forum between the two Supreme Court candidates.
Their first debate, yes.
I'm going to moderate one next Tuesday, Milwaukee Bar Association. The Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality will meet 10 a.m. Wednesday at room 412 East. And I'm going to be doing newsmakers interviews with Mike Gallagher, as we just discussed, and Mark Pocan. Anything else? Busy week next week?
Every week is busy in this place,
Every
Steve.
Week is busy. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for March 15th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.